Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Harris Cherokee Resort. Find us online at caesars.com/harris-cherokee.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
The Big Ten is back, and there's going to be trouble. Hey, nah. The Big Ten is back. So, yeah, just a moment ago, a couple of minutes before we go on the air, it is announced, as had long been expected, that the Big Ten is making its return for the upcoming football season. They put this out there on Twitter, and you got to use very serious voice when you talk about the Big Ten, because they certainly write in a serious voice, the Big Ten, Council of Presidents and Chancellors. Let me just stop myself right there for 1 second. On the list of people I would least want to have a beer with, college president's pretty high on that list. Somehow, though, the notion of a chancellor just seems even worse to me. I don't really know why that is, and that's probably completely unfair on my part, but the notion of someone who takes themselves seriously enough to call themselves a chancellor of something, I just feel like they'd be walking around with a scepter, you know, long tail of their robe following behind them. I don't know why that word always strikes me. But nonetheless, they've adopted significant medical protocols. Oh, this isn't a fly-by-night operation. These are significant medical protocols and have voted unanimously to resume the football season starting the weekend of October 23rd and 24th. They'll play an 8-game conference-only season with no buys and head for a Big Ten conference championship game the same week as the SEC championship, same day as the SEC championship game on December the 19th. I know we see this kind of stuff a lot, and you know we're all guilty of recency bias. I would dare say this is the strangest sports story that I can ever remember. You know, this is a little bit like we've seen coaches before decide not to take a job after taking one, but this is an entire conference making that same kind of a decision. You know, these conferences typically have a tendency to kind of turn like battleships, and yet, you know, a total about face here for the Big Ten. Let me tell you why this is relevant for Georgia fans, and, you know, this is where things are going to get, I mean, I'm just telling you right now, you better roll up your sleeves, you better get your fighting face on, you better be ready for all of this, because this is about to be a maddening conversation, because as much as I've been in favor of the Big Ten returning and really kind of rooting for those players, including a guy like Justin Fields, a former Georgia player, to get a chance to play this season, I just thought that was the right side to be on. As much as I've been kind of pro-Big Ten player through all of this, you're about to see me do a total about face and now all of a sudden get ready to be very angry about the notion that somehow the Big Ten, by playing 8 conference games, is playing for the same national championship as a school like Georgia and the rest of the SEC that's playing 10 conference games of an SEC-only variety. No one will ever acknowledge, not anybody who works for ESPN, not anybody in the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, no one will ever acknowledge the disparity between these two leagues because, frankly, you know, college football as a business, the national entity that it tries to be, is glad to have the Big Ten back. They didn't want the Midwest, you know, with the exception of Notre Dame, they didn't want the Midwest completely sitting out this upcoming season. They're glad to have the Big Ten back. They're glad to have a more robust debate for the college football playoff. They want them in the top 25. That's when the AP put them in there with the preseason poll anyway. I just think a lot of people are a lot more comfortable, and it, from a business standpoint, it makes sense, are a lot more comfortable with the notion that college football is a national sport. So the way that you make it more regionalized is by, you know, acknowledging that the SEC is playing a superior brand of football, and in a year like this, just facing a more daunting task of 10 games conference-only variety. Now, I'm telling you right now, the athletic directors, the coaches, the university president, the SEC, they wouldn't go back and do it different if they could. They've had the right plan all along. On this show, we've been explaining that and saying that for time to time. The Big Ten is now under the cover of darkness trying to weasel their way back in to the college football season, but no one will ever acknowledge that the brand of football they are playing, in addition to just the competition on the field, but the number of games that are being played is inferior to what's happening in the SEC. Let me say this in a very succinct manner. When folks were thinking that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 weren't playing, the question existed of, will the national champion eventually have an asterisk? I said no then, but I'm not so sure it won't have an asterisk now. If a Big Ten team emerges through an 8-game conference schedule, gets a chance to go to the college football playoff and somehow wins. And let's face it, even with the opt-outs that Ohio State has had, and who knows if some of those players, including Sean Wade most recently, who knows if they, you know, change their mind, but it's certainly possible that Ohio State talented enough that could win the college football playoff if they make that tournament. But if they do so, having played two fewer regular season games than an SEC team like Georgia, at that point in time, I would say, well, that national champion's got an asterisk. Now, many people in the national media won't be saying that, but I have no problem telling you that a Big Ten national champion in a year like this, clearly with an easier path towards the college football playoff and a less rigorous run towards a national championship, yeah, I think the idea of an asterisk there makes a lot of sense to me. And for Georgia fans and other SEC fans who happen to kind of tune in and watch our show or listen to our podcast or radio show, you just better be getting ready for an incredibly, incredibly maddening conversation. Let me put some words from Kirby Smart behind all of this. Go back a few weeks ago when he was asked what the notion of an asterisk for an SEC champion in a year like this, a national champion when we thought two of the Power Five leagues were not playing. I thought what Smart said then there was really important, and it's a great reminder right now that the SEC in 2020, it's been true for a number of years, but in 2020, more true than ever, is just playing a different brand of football. This is what Kirby Smart said.
I don't know how you would have an asterisk by a conference championship. I mean, because you would, that would be probably as most realist we've ever had, right? I mean, 10 games and hopefully a championship game. So I'm assuming you're talking about that. That there's no way. That the only asterisk by that one would be this is the toughest team there ever was because they went through 10 games in our league and played a championship game. Hats off to them because they need an asterisk saying they were the national champions, in my opinion, because it's yeah. going to be tough in terms of the number of practices we have, fighting COVID. How many? If you told me how many guys had to miss games, you know, in a 10-game schedule because of a exposure or because of a positive, you know, it'd probably really have an asterisk, you know, on the conference championship because, you know, one game you could have your starting quarterback out and that could play a major factor.
So I think it's great that Smart's saying that. I hope he keeps that tune up as we head towards this season. He says the SEC year will be more real than it's ever been before, and the SEC champion will be the, and I love this word, he didn't say best, he said toughest. Toughest team of all time. I think that's true. By comparison, what the Big Ten's about to do, kind of weaseling their way back into the season, is less tough by comparison by a long shot, and frankly, a lot less real. This, to me, is an inauthentic gesture to say, we know we made a mistake. We're going to try to drag our way back into a season and be a part of this thing, but in not quite as robust of a way as the SEC is doing all this. So just to kind of sum all this up, asterisk on a national champion, I was fine not having one prior to this, but now that the Big Ten is returning with some sort of zero-calorie, sugar-free version of a college football season, if that team thinks it's going to go to the college football playoff, win that, having faced less tests than the SEC team would have, then I'm more open to the notion of an asterisk now than I otherwise would have been before. Let me do one more thing on this topic before we move on, though. You know, the one thing that we on this show have kind of had a chip on our shoulder about for quite some time, and I think many of you have kind of felt the same way on, is the idea that the SEC was football at all costs. The SEC had to play football this year because it's such a football-obsessed league, and that they was going to do whatever it could to play football, the science be damned, the coronavirus be damned, and everything else. And the one thing that we have always felt here is the SEC has not gotten enough credit for the incredible care that it's taken to understand what its member institutions have been facing in regards to the coronavirus. And in particular, the notion of myocarditis, which a lot of us have learned now as a heart condition that can stem from viral illnesses. And when you go back and look at the Big Ten announcement that was made a moment ago, returning for this upcoming year, Jim Borchers, who's a head team physician for Ohio State, says everyone associated with the Big Ten should be very proud of the groundbreaking steps that are now being taken to better protect the health and safety of the student athletes and surrounding communities. He says the data we're going to collect from testing and cardiac registry will provide major contributions for all 14 Big Ten institutions as they study COVID-19 and attempt to mitigate the spread of the disease among wider communities. So I think this is going to be spun by many, and the Big Ten's got plenty of surrogates working around the globe, it would seem. But it's going to be spun by many as the Big Ten has taken great care to understand what it's facing with the coronavirus and myocarditis as well, as if the SEC has not. We have long since said that the SEC, and we've had people around the league speaking up to say that this is a condition that can form off any viral illness, not just the coronavirus. This has always been a little bit easier for me to understand. Even someone like me that's not particularly well-educated, it's always been much easier for me to understand on the basis of the way that some SEC folks have explained it, that It can occur, you know, on any viral illness, but with the coronavirus, it may be actually easier to catch because you're testing regularly for the coronavirus and therefore on guard to start testing for the possible signs of myocarditis if and when someone tests positive for the coronavirus. That just kind of makes sense for me. And I'll go back to Kirby Smart from yesterday here just for a moment because, listen, here's the thing about Smart. Given every opportunity before to kind of speak about what's going on with coronavirus and kind of speak about how it's going to impact college football, Smart has been very careful with his words. He has chosen his words carefully. He doesn't shoot from the hip. He has never gotten political on one side or the other. Smart has just been very careful and judicious because ultimately Smart views his job is to get his team ready to play football. He is not going to get lost in the weeds and swing in every pitch when it comes to, you know, some of the other stuff related to this. But when asked about myocarditis, the condition that has been very important, rightly so, for the Big Ten, Smart took this head on yesterday and I think articulating something that the rest of the SEC folks have kind of understood for a long time. As I said before, it's a sensitive topic for me that some people act like the SEC didn't care about myocarditis when really I think the actual facts on the ground would suggest the SEC has been studying myocarditis, satisfied with its plan for a lot longer than most people have given them credit for. Kirby Smart, an example of that yesterday.
Every flu virus, you know, is associated with the possibility of getting myocarditis. And the research that's been done hasn't shown that the COVID is a greater indicator of getting myocarditis than any other normal flu symptom. And we didn't actually check kids for myocarditis when they got the flu and they had other viruses. So now we've actually put ourselves in a better position because we're testing the heart. We're doing EKGs. We're doing ultrasounds. We're checking everything now after this. So it's really much safer in terms of not wanting a player to get diagnosed or have myocarditis after having COVID, when before we didn't necessarily do all those tests after something that could have caused it. The key and what we all want is to not have a young man playing or performing or doing extra exercise and be dealing with myocarditis. So how do you prevent that? You test and you research and you look at it, and Ron and his staff are doing a tremendous job of that. We're very fortunate at UGA to have a baseline test on every kid that's ever come in here. So after they have COVID or maybe they have antibodies for COVID, we're able to test them and look and see what the differences are in their heart. And we're very fortunate to be able to do that, which makes me much more comfortable with the decisions that they made.
Every press conference Kirby Smart has done since the coronavirus has taken place, you can go to our Dog Nation YouTube page and watch them all. There are plenty of coronavirus questions that he just sidesteps and moves on to the next topic because he's not going to get lost in the weeds on some of this kind of stuff. He took that head on yesterday, and I think that matters. The SEC has had its plan for myocarditis in place for a while. Smart people have studied it. The Big Ten's now return. They're going to champion themselves as people who just took it more seriously. That's why it took them longer. Subtext being they think they're smarter than everybody else. Whatever they've been doing over the last few weeks, it'd take a pretty dumb person to describe as smart. But all of a sudden now they are back. They want to be a part of the national championship discussion, the college football playoff discussion. If you're a UGA fan, if you're an SEC fan, you better roll up your sleeves. You better batten down the hatches because the debate that's about to come about who the four best teams in this country are, it is about to be truly a maddening one. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by our friends at Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. Let me just say this very quickly. Got into a little bit of a bad habit last few days of going very long off the top of the program. I need to get back on schedule here just a little bit. So we'll try to do that. Good to have you with us live on video, 10 a.m. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And boy, oh boy, do we appreciate our friends at Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort being with us for Dog Nation Daily, because if nothing else, we're just glad to have them back. You're watching on video. You see the beautiful mountains there of North Carolina. Two great properties. They're both 2 hours from Atlanta. It's Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort. It's Harrah's Cherokee Valley River. Great dining options. Their spa, their luxury hotel accommodations. There's terrific shopping. I mean, it's just a great getaway. You need one of those, especially if you're trying to get your batteries recharged before the season begins 2 Saturdays from now. Sneak over there. The great thing is it's all the gaming and entertainment that you've come to expect over the years, but it's even better now because great care is being taken to make sure that there's social distancing in place and everybody's, you know, happy, healthy, doing everything they're supposed to be doing. Good work by our friends at Harrah's Cherokee Casino Resort, making sure that happens. Also, now's the best time to join Caesars Rewards as well. Until September 30th, new rewards members can receive save $50 in free play. Just visit any Caesars Reward Center for more details on that. You want more details on all of this, go to Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. It's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. It is Mike Griffith here coming up in just a couple of moments. Before that, though, let's get ready to go around the doghouse today, delivered by our friends at Marco's Pizza. So let's talk quarterbacks here for a moment. I want to make a simple point on kind of where things stand with the quarterback position for now. We're going to do a lot more of some of the other stuff throughout the rest of the week, but there's just kind of a simple point I want to make, and it actually kind of circles back to something we said on yesterday's show. I don't think there's any denying that while Georgia fans, the sort of larger opinion of Georgia fans is they just want a good quarterback. JT Daniels, Dwan Mathis, it could be Carson Beck, it could be Stetson Bennett, it could have been Jamie Newman. Georgia fans just want a successful quarterback that leads a powerful offense. But once you get below that, there is a sense in the fact that Dwan Mathis is becoming a little bit of a fan favorite. Mathis has been through a ton. It is an amazing story. I mean, it is an amazing, amazing story. I've been lucky enough to get a chance to talk to some people close to Mathis, and you just hear it, and you're just kind of blown away by how scary it must have been to be hundreds of miles from your son, have him, you know, go into the hospital, this weird brain situation. He emerges from that. He's healthy enough to kind of get back to, you know, living a viable life. And then he's playing football again, and all of a sudden now he has a chance to maybe be the starting quarterback at Georgia. I mean, my gosh, who wouldn't love that? Yesterday, Kirby Smart acknowledged that there is kind of a special nature to Mathis' story. This is what the coach said about Dwan yesterday.
We don't pull for him more just because he's had the brain surgery. I mean, I'm not going to say that because we pull for all our kids. I mean, he's been through so much, and he's a, you know, he's a bright-eyed, talented kid. There's a lot of guys that have confidence in Dwan, and he's, you know, the best thing that happened to him probably was all the reps he took on the scout team last year, because he went down there and got to get some live bullets coming at him. And although we couldn't hit him, we never hit the quarterback anyway. I still remember going to see him in the hospital, and he's, you know, all his family members were down seeing him, and it was a, you know, it was a scary, scary moment. And for him to push through that, and I forget what his weight went down to, but I know he got really skinny during that time. And for him to, you know, put some weight back on and work hard in the off season, and I know during the COVID time, he was one of the guys that that worked extremely hard. I mean, he would go out and just throw on his own and send us videos of him throwing on his own. So he's a really hard worker, and all those quarterbacks, to be honest with you, they're all competitors and good leaders.
So, yeah, you can't you have to acknowledge that the backstory that Mathis brings to this discussion does make him at least a more interesting subject for many people. And I would say that some people, Kirby says the program can't be doing this. Georgia wants all of its players to succeed. But for many fans, there's just kind of a special nature to the Mathis story that you can't deny. I think it's also true, though, that the other quarterback who we think is primarily competing to be the starter, JT Daniels, also has a pretty interesting story as well. Now, a knee injury is not the same thing as a brain injury. No one would suggest that it was. But when you think about the way in which Daniels worked his way up to being a starter at USC, probably a dream for a California kid, only to lose that opportunity after getting hurt in 2019, and apparently a medical setback along the way to being able to play this upcoming season. You know, I think there's an aspect to the Daniels story that maybe we haven't done enough to fully appreciate yet. I think Kirby Smart gave us, in fact, some details yesterday that I wasn't even aware of. Many of you probably weren't either. Here is Smart on Daniels.
You know, the interesting thing on JT, I don't know that everybody understands, is he's post-op a lot further than most ACLs. So post his surgery fixing it, but he had a repair done. I want to say it was December or January. He had to go in and do some other things to help fix it from the original surgery. And that was, you know, before we even really knew about him or were with him. But that put him behind a little bit. So the part about him getting cleared, we certainly expect him to get cleared and think he will get cleared, but that's not my decision. That goes a lot into Ron and them. It goes into flexibility. It goes into strength. How far is the left knee from the right knee? What is the girth of the knee? What is the muscle mass missing? There's a lot of things that go into that that the doctors have to do to clear him medically to take hits and be able to play.
So I'm a media person that doesn't really get into the media inside baseball of who's doing press conferences and who's not, and who's being allowed to talk to the media and who's not. That's not my thing, you know, quite so much. But I would say when it comes to Daniels, you know, just given the subtext that everyone has for Dwan Mathis, the rich storyline that Georgia fans connect with Mathis, I think that Georgia would do well to remind Georgia fans a little bit more of what Daniels' story is. the work that he's had to do to get back on the field. Not comparing knee injury to brain injury. Those are very different things. But Daniels himself has his own story. His reasons for choosing Georgia. California kid coming to UGA. Chance to prove that he's the top flight quarterback that people thought he was in the 2018 class. It seems like a pretty interesting story as well. I would suggest that Georgia could do more to introduce Daniels to UGA fans, just to make it more fair, to make people understand Daniels quite as well as they understand Mathis. I mean, ultimately, I think Georgia fans are probably glad to have both players. The Mathis story is an incredible feel-good story, and he provides a dimension on the field that a lot of fans are looking forward to seeing. But Daniels has some credentials in his own right. And I would suggest, as we head towards the start of the season, whenever Daniels is eventually cleared with a chance to play, whether it be game one or sometime after that, doing something to introduce him more to Georgia fans, making him more than just the guy who came to UGA from California, I think that would do well to give Georgia fans a full picture of exactly what this quarterback competition is all about. It's Around the Doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. It's America's most beloved pizza. It's real pizza made the Italian way, and it's a great deal for you right now as well. I want to make sure you hear this. You can get a large one-topping pizza and 10 chicken wings or dippers right now for just $17.99. It's an incredible deal. It's one of the reasons why my family loves Marco's Pizza so much. I got two very hungry mouths with my children, and, you know, frankly, I like to eat a lot too. So good food at a great price is always important for my family, and you're getting ready to watch some sports here this week, or you're heading towards some football this weekend. That's a great game day favorite as well. Let me tell you about it one more time. A large one-topping pizza, 10 chicken wings or dippers, just $17.99. You can order today, delivery or carry out, or you can do so at the on the Marco's app or at marcos.com for all of that. It's good to have Marco's Pizza delivering around the doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. All right, a lot more to get into. Georgia got a decommitment yesterday. Elijah Judy, four-star linebacker. We'll share some brief thoughts on that coming up before we're done. But for now, for more on the quarterback situation, a guy who's been all over it from the very get-go, it's Mike Griffith from Dog Nation here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello to Mike Griffith, who said good stuff on JT Daniels, Dwan Mathis, all the Georgia quarterbacks there at DogNation.com. And Mike, there's a lot to unpack about the rumors and the things that Kirby Smart said about where this quarterback situation stands. But let me just kind of sort of as an entryway to this conversation ask you, do you agree with the idea that right now, Dwan Mathis feels like the fan favorite for many because of what he's been through and just because of the fact that, you know, Mathis just kind of comes across as a pretty cool guy, that there's also a lot to like about JT Daniels as well. And maybe there's more that could be done to introduce Daniels to Georgia fans in a way that could give some of them a connection with Daniels the way that many of them now feel they have that connection with Mathis.
Yeah, it's a unique situation, you know. Just, I was going back, yeah, looking at the story I wrote from after visiting with Dwan in his home before he came to Georgia, and you know, he talked about it being an adventure, and I'm thinking, boy, little did he know just, you know, what it would, how much of an adventure it would be. You know, I think this is a guy that Georgia fans have to pull for. I mean, you know, how can you not? It's a guy that had, you know, brain surgery and, you know, had to relearn his balance and, you know, lengthy rehabilitation process, gained back those 15 to 20 pounds, and he sticks it out. And then he doesn't get to travel to games, and he's homesick, and he's thinking about going home, and the family convinces him Georgia's where he needs to be, to the point where he stays down in Athens during COVID-19 instead of going back to Michigan, stayed in this area. So, you know, it's a guy that's really grown on Georgia, and certainly Georgia's grown on him, and, you know, so much potential. You know, you hear 6'6", 215, and 10-800, you know, your mind just goes crazy with the upside that Dwan has. It's exciting. I mean, he's just, but he's a redshirt freshman that hasn't played yet. And that's where, you know, Kirby and Todd Monken have to make a decision on whether you go with the more experienced player. Now, to your point on JT Daniels, listen, the Daniels family doesn't want all the attention. They've been through that. He, you know, his story is, you know, he was the local guy. You know, we think of Brock Vandergrift. Well, he's Brock Vandergrift on steroids.
Good point.
I mean, not literally. But in terms of, you know, a local guy, you know, out of modern day, I mean, you know, Vandergrift plays for some tiny little school. This guy comes from the preeminent powerhouse school in Southern California where they grow quarterbacks on trees. I mean, there's four guys from his league in the SEC right now. One of them, Bryce Young. That was the guy that came in after him at modern day. So he had all the attention. He had all the headlines going into his freshman year at Southern Cal. He was only the second true freshman quarterback to ever start there. They've had all that. They've had the parade. They're coming here to play football. That's what Daniels is here for, to win a championship and to play in Todd Monken's air raid scheme. Now, it's interesting because Kirby did admit that these different quarterbacks, and throw Carson Beck in there as well, because he's certainly not one to overlook, as Aaron Murray made the point of, all these quarterbacks, they have different skills and they're at different stages of their career. And so when they have different quarterbacks are on the field, you're going to see different levels of offense. You know, a guy who has 2 years of major college experience and 3 years of you know, pro-style offense in high school, that's 5 years. He's going to be able to do more things and distribute the ball easier than somebody who's always been a little bit more of a playmaker in his own right. Dwan, like I said, when you're 6'6 and 215 and run a 10-800, you know, you don't got to get to that third progression. you can take it around the corner, and there ain't many people that are going to catch you. So I think if you see Dwan out there, you see probably a little bit more read option with Zamir White. That sort of dual-threat quarterback offense. You see JT out there, you probably see the air raid offense, you know, something similar to what LSU ran. I don't know if they'll be that successful. I mean, he's not Joe Burrow, and I don't see LSU receivers here, not yet at least. And then Carson Beck is a guy that I think kind of brings a little bit of both to the table. So everybody has their reasons for who they want, whether it's story behind the player or whether it's the style of offense that they want to see. But at the end of the day, Kirby Smart's got to make a decision that's going to be based on who gives him the best chance to win.
All right, let me. I want to do something on Mathis and something on Daniels here for a moment. Both points of confusion for me that maybe you can clear up, or maybe there just is no clarity of this right now. So let me start with Mathis for a moment. Short question, longer follow-up. Do you believe that Mathis is a viable contender to win the starting job at Georgia?
I believe he's a viable contender to start the first game.
So, Mike, if that is true, how did we get to this point from when it's Newman and Daniels on the roster? It's, well, you know, Jamie Newman, JT Daniels working with the ones, you know, Dwan Mathis, you know, I guess kind of working with the twos. All of a sudden, when Newman is gone, at that point in time, we start hearing, well, gosh, you know, cannot Dwan Mathis to actually win this starting job. There's a degree to which a lot of this just kind of seems to come, I don't want to say nowhere, but boy, this was a pretty fast-growing story simply on the heels of Jamie Newman opting out. There was none of this prior to Newman's opt-out. What do you make of that?
Well, you can only have so many guys get split their reps with the number ones, and at this stage of camp, you were only going to have two guys running with the ones. I mean, Kirby had said that before the first scrimmage, that they had to pare this down. And if Jamie Newman was still here, it'd still be Jamie Newman and JT Daniels, because those would be the guys getting the reps with the ones. Now that Jamie Newman left, that opened up an opportunity for Dwan to split the reps with the one. And so, you know, because JT's not cleared for the first game yet, and Dwan has done some good things. He's also done some not so. I mean, he's just like anybody else. I mean, these guys have all had their ups and downs. Nobody's running away with the job and just, you know, screaming out loud. But JT is the guy that was brought in to run the Todd Monken offense. But maybe now, if you're Kirby Smart. And I don't know the medical condition of JT. That's kind of the missing ingredient here when we try to do this factor, we try to get this quotient. We don't really know the value of JT Daniels' knee. How ready is he? And so maybe, you know, perhaps in those practices, and again, I'm not there. The one practice I saw 30 minutes of was the second one, scrimmage two. And it was pretty clear that when they were in the passing game, that JT was the better passer. It also doesn't take a genius to figure out that if you're going to run read option and want a quarterback that can run, Dwan is far better at this stage of the game. So how did it get there? You know, the guy that was competing, one of the two guys that was competing for the starting job left, and the other guy stepped in, and Kirby Smart, the guy, just like he did with Fields and Fromm, this competition is going to go up to the kickoff, and then it's going to go through week one and week two and week three. I mean, Georgia, there's no, you're the guy, and you know, sleep well tonight. If you're the guy today, show up tomorrow and win the job again.
So on the Daniels thing, what confuses me about this a little bit, and like I said, I don't have an agenda behind this. I'm just kind of confused by it. The notion that they seemingly, I know Kirby Smart went into more detail about this yesterday, they seemingly believe that he will be eventually cleared to play. Smart, sure. I think, has said they wouldn't be practicing if they didn't think that. And yet, it just seems weird to me that you would be, you know, practicing a guy who's currently too hurt to play. I know that Mathis was practicing some at the end of last year, you know, when he wouldn't have been, you know, cleared to play in the game. So I'm just kind of concerned, you know, I'm not concerned, but confused by the idea that they think he will be eventually cleared. That's why they are practicing him. And yet somehow this injury is a cloud over the judgment of whether or not he's capable of starting. I have to say, given everything that's been said about JT Daniels' health, I don't understand this situation at all.
Well, I mean, there's a difference between being cleared to play and cleared to practice, because they don't hit the quarterback in practice. And, you know, obviously when you're getting hit and when you're having, you know, Jalen Carter-sized people or, you know, land on you, 340 pounds on your knee or hitting you from the blind side, you know, you've got to make sure that knee is 100% cleared to handle that. And there's different test dates. So, you know, for example, you know, the last time they tested this knee was 3 weeks ago. You know, now there's another test date due up. In the meantime, there's no reason to test it because you don't have a game. You're splitting the reps, and you're going to split the reps whether JT's cleared or not. I think some of this is, you know, Kirby playing cards. This is what Kirby does. Why would he want anybody to know who his starter's going to be? I think some of it, though, is also, is, hey, let's give Dwan Mathis every opportunity that we can to win this job, just like you would Jalen Kimber at cornerback, just like you did to Kobe Dean last year as a true freshman behind Tate Crowder. You know, that's the way Kirby looks at that. That's kind of the George way now with these great recruits they get. When they say you're going to have an opportunity to compete, that's not lip service. He really is going to let these guys compete. He's going to give Dwan Mathis reps and split it, because you've got to have a number two, and you've got to have a number three, because of the, not just because of the chance for injury, and we've talked about that before, 4 out of 14 teams got through the year with one starter, but also because of COVID-19. So, you know, Kirby is doing his due diligence for the program by getting more than one guy prepared, and the only way to do that is to maintain a competition. And I would even say, I wouldn't be surprised if he played all three guys at Arkansas. I don't read into that as the end-all, be-all decision. You know, we'll have to see how the offense looks. I mean, what about this potential, BA? What if JT Daniels starts and he's the guy that can distribute the ball, but the receivers play dead again and they drop passes and don't run, and they're getting penalty? You go, oh, wait a minute. Maybe we're not ready for this air raid. Maybe we need to shrink this offense. Now, all of a sudden, you go, well, we got Dwan Mathis. You know, he's got this, you know, read option ability. He's strong, fast, you know, quarterback. Or maybe they say, hey, you know, Carson's back. You know, Carson, let's give Carson. So, to me, it's just football competition. It's turned into something else, though. Unfortunately, fans are attacking one another and making this a bigger issue than just Kirby Smart preparing three guys for a football season and picking the best one to play.
Well, I mean, I don't want to, you know, get all lost on this topic, but, I mean, the cloud that hangs over this is, in 2018, there's a lot of evidence to suggest Kirby Smart chose the wrong quarterback. I mean, Jake Fromm was inferior at Georgia last year compared to what Justin Fields ended up being for Ohio State. So, I mean, you have to acknowledge that this competition hasn't necessarily produced what seems like the best quarterback before. And I like Jake Fromm, but Justin Fields played better than Jake Fromm last year.
Yeah, but the competition was in 2018, 2019, and Jake was fifth in the nation in passing efficiency, and they were in contention for a national championship until the fourth quarter of the SEC title game when DeAndre Walker went out with an injury and Jalen Hurts came off the bench. You know, go back and look, Jake threw for more than 300 yards in that game. So the 2019 Justin Fields, I would absolutely agree. 2019 Justin Fields, in the Ohio State offense, is better than 2019 Jake Fromm, but in 2018, Justin Fields was a true freshman trying to learn an offense. And it doesn't just happen that quickly. I mean, they don't just go from five stars to heroes. It takes time. And, you know, Jake was very fortunate to have Sony Michel and Nick Chubb in the backfield and no competition when he did it as a true freshman. But by the time Justin got here, he had a full season. So, ultimately, some people could make the argument, but for the people that were at practice and talking to the players every day and listening to what Jim Chaney and Kirby Smart said, I didn't think those guys were dumb coaches. I think they're pretty good coaches, and I thought they played the guy they thought was the best. I didn't get to see all the practices they did. As far as 2019, golly, you turn on the television and Justin Fields was great. Guess we'll see what happens this year. It's just like this year. All I've seen is 30 minutes. So all I can go on is the 30 minutes that I've seen and listening to what, you know, the coaches say. And one quarterback has experience. another quarterback, where, you know, somewhat similar situation, only I think the difference in experience in this case is probably even more pronounced because JT has 2 years of experience and the high school background, whereas Dwan is coming off a serious injury that limited him to just scout team reps last year, and he didn't get a spring. That's not to say he can't play this year, that he won't do well. It's just that he's got that disadvantage going in.
So are you saying that you think that JT Daniels eventually is the – whenever the deadline on eventually is, you think JT Daniels is the winner of this quarterback competition?
If the air raid offense is what Kirby wants to do, then he would be the guy to run it. But if they decide that the air raid that they brought Todd Monken in to run, that they're not going to run it, I think that opens the door for Dwan and Carson Beck.
So we'll kind of finish with this, and I know I've just peppered you with quarterback questions, but that's the hot topic at the moment. So it's been told to me that Dwan Mathis played the entirety of the first portion of the scrimmage. JT Daniels played some in situations with the ones in the second portion of the scrimmage. Carson Beck played the entirety of the scrimmage with the number two offense. That's the way it's explained to me, and other people have essentially heard the same thing. I believe you've basically reported the same thing there as well. So if we stipulate that as what happened on Saturday, why do you think it happened that way?
Kirby Smart, I asked him that question. I asked him that question yesterday. He said it's a rotation. It was, you know, that was Dwan's day to get the snaps. He said they rotate these guys every day.
But you believe him when he says, I mean, you know, Kirby Smart is not under oath in that press conference. You believe him when he says that?
I believe it to the extent of this. You've got to have Dwan Mathis ready to play. Whether you're going to start him or whether you're not going to start him, I think you've got to have him ready to play at Arkansas. I think we would all agree that whether or not he starts or not, Kirby had better have at least two quarterbacks ready to play. I don't think there's anybody that would disagree with that. What better opportunity are you going to have to see what Dwan Mathis does in front of a crowd, and it wasn't much of a crowd, but in front of people, than that Saturday scrimmage? That's how you find out about guys. That's, you give him a long leash and you say, all right, let's see what happens. Let's put some fans in the stands. Let's see what he does under the lights. You don't have any other opportunity. That's as close to game experience as Dwan Mathis can possibly get. So that if he does take a snap, or when he does take a snap, I'm convinced he's going to play at Arkansas, whether he starts there or not, so that when he does take a snap, it's not going to be the first time he does it in a stadium and with people watching. Because the week before in the scrimmage, he threw two interceptions on the first two series. So you've got to get him to a point where he's confident, and you've got to get to a point where you trust him to put him in the game. Because Carson Beck's another option, too. At the bottom line on the Georgia offense, listen, I know everybody wants a dynamic offense. Kirby talks about it. He wants explosive plays. He wants a lot of points. But the only way Georgia is going to lose to 9 out of 10 teams on his schedule is if the offense messes up and turns the ball over. That's the only reason they lost South Carolina. They had, what, four turnovers and two missed field goals. They had 490 yards offense, but they turned it over. The only way Georgia is going to lose to 9 out of the 10 teams on the schedule, Brandon, is by turning the football over. And if you know Kirby Smart, you know that he usually goes with the guy that doesn't turn the football over. So I don't know what's going to happen the next 2 weeks of practice, what's happening behind those closed doors and those scrimmages that they're still having that we're not seeing, but the guy that Kirby puts out there is not going to be a turnover machine.
Okay, so let me just finish with this. You would acknowledge, though, that if the goal is to do more than just win in the regular season, you know, win the college football playoff, I mean, go back and look. You got to go back to Jake Coker in 2015 to find a national championship team that didn't have a first-round talent at quarterback. You know, offense is what's winning the college football playoff. Yeah, you could have avoided, you know, a loss against South Carolina without turnovers last year, but the truth is, you know, a lot of those turnovers came because the offense was having to just press the issue to get something going because there was just there are plenty of yards, not enough points in a game like that. I think, Mike, for the average Georgia fan, the goal here is to do more than just beat up on Missouri and Kentucky, but it's actually to win the SEC, to win the college football playoff, and big-time plays from the quarterback position. Big-time offense has been really a prerequisite for that. As I said before, certainly, you know, last year before that, you know, Deshaun Watson era, you know, big time offense has been a just an absolute calling card for a big performance in the college football playoff the last few years.
I absolutely agree. I don't know if there's any question of that, you know, but you can't snap your fingers and make it happen. I mean, you know, Dwan Mathis at this stage of his career is not Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he's not there yet. He needs experience. He needs time. He needs reps. And, you know, the fear that I have, and knowing Juan and knowing his dad like I do, and, you know, I've known him before he got here. I mean, I know the family. You know, expectations. You know, you got to temper your expectations for this guy. It's not fair to expect him to go out there and see Justin Fields 2019
or
Deshaun Watson 2017. And I feel like there's a lot of that pressure that's mounting right now. And he's not there yet because he doesn't have the experience. I mean, you just can't. And listen, he's a tough kid. He's resilient. But, I mean, my goodness, the guy had brain surgery. And he's back from the brain surgery. But what the brain surgery did was erase, 9 months of his life. I mean, he got back on the scout team in November, but he hasn't been hit. I mean, he's done some hitting, but not. He hasn't been in a football game since 2018. So all I'm saying is don't put so much pressure on this kid.
I totally agree with that.
And people need to give him time. And maybe by December or January, you know, Dwan Mathis is balling out. Who knows? Maybe by then Carson Beck's balling out. I agree with you about previous seasons and what it's taken. But I will also say this. This Georgia defense is better than any defense I've ever covered in person. And I would say probably better than any defense in quite some time when you look at the depth. And I would also say that because of this off season and the lack of opportunities to prepare, we're not going to see a slick offense like we see. I thought Clemson sputtered at times. I didn't think Trevor Lawrence looked great. I know they rolled weight, but I said, gosh, that just didn't look the same. So I'm not saying that Kirby's going to intentionally, not have a good – of course not. But he's going to win games. And to me, in this COVID-19 season, this is a year that you do try and get by week, because you just don't know who's going to be in the lineup, whether it's injury-related or whether it's COVID-19-related. And it's going to be get to the finish line, and we'll see who the best quarterback is, and we'll see how much offense they need. And if they need more offense, I think they'll have options, because I expect all three of these quarterbacks to play throughout the year. And Dwan Mathis' father, Terrence, has said that from the jump. He said, hey, it's going to take all three of these guys. And I think JT Daniels' dad is on the same page. So, you know, while there's division in the fan base, the most important thing is there's unity in the clubhouse.
All right, there's more questions to be asked, but I've kept you too long as it is. So I'll let you go now. Mike, thanks for being here. We'll read you at dognation.com. We'll catch up with you again soon. It's a fascinating time as Georgia heads towards the start of the season, desperately in need of some offensive improvement and looking for a quarterback that can help stimulate that. Thanks for being here, and we will chat again soon.
Appreciate it, B. Have a good one.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So there's something that Mike says that I completely agree with. You can't put too much pressure on Mathis. You can't put too much pressure on Daniels. It is unfair, because what happens is, and this would have been true if Jamie Newman were still here too, you know, you sort of heap the accolades. First round pick, Heisman Trophy, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then when it doesn't happen, through no fault of the player, because he didn't go on some microphone and say, hey, watch me, I'm about to go win the Heisman. He didn't say that. People said that about him. When it doesn't happen, people have a tendency to turn on him or turn on some other player as a way of blaming that person for why, you know, the hype train got derailed on this other player. It's all gross. And around here, we just don't do stuff like that. You can listen to the show every single day for years, and we've, you know, been doing this thing for 5 years now. You know, we don't trash players. We don't do that. We don't really pick favorites one over the other either. I'm a fan of Georgia. I like them all. And whichever quarterback emerges at Georgia, I want to be able to root for that guy. It's one of the reasons why I think it'd be nice to see the JT Daniels story told a little more fully, so that people can have the context for him that they probably many of them have for Dwan Mathis, because Mathis has been around here a little bit longer. But I think that Mike is right when he says, be careful you don't put too much pressure on Mathis. Be careful you don't put too much pressure on Daniels. Mike's right about that. But where I stop short, though, is to say, also, be sure you don't put too much pressure on these Georgia coaching staff to figure this out. You know, what is the, Big Cat from Barstool, the figure it out gift where he's yelling that out from the stands of a stadium? I am more than happy heaping that pressure on Todd Monken, who came here for a reason, not for a season, on Kirby Smart, who has got sort of everything but the high-powered offense right now. I'm gonna treat Mathis kindly. I'm going to treat Daniels kindly. You know, Beck, if he gets in there, I'm going to treat him kindly in terms of we're not going to expect too much of any individual player. But as we've said a million times before, this is a no-excuses season. this season counts. It may be a little bit weird. There was no G-Day game. Season still counts. Summer was weird. You didn't ever really know if you're going to be playing or not. Season still counts. You're playing, you know, 10-game conference only. Season still counts. This is a no-excuses year. What happens in this year goes on everybody's Wikipedia page. The coaches that play in it, you know, the program itself. You know, Georgia can't afford to be one of these teams that says, oh, well, we'll try to figure out the offense thing, you know, next year. We'll use defense to win as many games we can. We already know what that results in. The other side of that equal sign is one or two losses, second best team in the SEC, fifth best team in the country. That's what that gets you. To be really good on defense, pretty good with the running game, a quarterback, offensive line, passing attack, work in progress. We know what that equation results in. Second best in the SEC, fifth best in the country, and that's not what Georgia wants to be at the end of the year. There is pressure on, not because the window is closing. The window doesn't close this year alone. Georgia's going to be in the mix here for a few years, but at some point in time, you got to decide, when are you going to figure out that other side of the ball? That's a lot of what's at stake as you move into this year. Hey, let me say this real quick here for a moment before we dive into the rest of our SEC through. I think tomorrow, I hope I'm able to do this, I've got a really big, fun announcement about our Dog Nation post-game show. I hope to be able to give you that announcement tomorrow. I'm really excited about that. One thing I can tell you about that is we're looking forward to being back again this year for home games at the UGA Bookstore. That's been our home away from home, really, for a number of years, many years around Dog Nation. It's a great place for you to get stocked up as well for your game day apparel. Many of you not tailgating this year. We had that news come out yesterday. I guess at some point in time we'll get into that on the show. But, tailgating going to be different this year. You may be home gating, but you still want to be decked out in style with your UGA apparel. UGA Bookstore gives you a chance to do that. It's open 7 days a week right there in the Athens campus. Maybe right now it's easier for you to shop online, though, and the great news on that is it's open 24/7 online, UGABookstore.com. UGABookstore.com for all of that. All right, SEC through talk here for a moment. And yesterday at Orgeron said something kind of weird. Orgeron's one of these guys, a little different maybe than Kirby. I think that Kirby's pretty, I said this off the top of the program or near the top of the show, Kirby pretty careful with the way that he talks, careful with the things that he says. He doesn't get drawn off sides by, you know, COVID topics very easily. He's just judicious. Orgeron's a little bit more of a shoot from the hip type guy. Sometimes I like it. Orgeron was really eloquent in his argument for why football mattered and why football needed to return back at a time when there was some doubt about that. I like that part of it. Some of the other words that he says, he could probably just choose his words a little more carefully, if nothing else, to prevent a distraction for his team. Let me read this from yesterday. On the subject of the coronavirus, he says, not all of our players, but most of our players have caught it. I think that hopefully they won't catch it again, and hopefully they're not out for games. He says, hopefully that once you catch it, you don't get it again. I'm not a doctor. I think they have a 90-day window, so most of the players that have caught it, you know, we do feel like they'll be eligible for games. I mean, honestly, you know, people who made this into like something super controversial are probably making more out of it than probably needed to be. But I think if you're a coach like Orgeron, you've got to be a little bit careful in just making it seem like you're not fully plugged in to what's going on. It's a little bit, I guess, is the word cavalier, a little cavalier to say, yeah, I think most of our team has caught it. It makes it seem like, I don't know, maybe you haven't taken this quite as seriously as you possibly could. I mean, for a certain segment of the population, they're going to point to a story like this and say, you know, what ought to be noticed is that young people, you know, may contract it, but for the most part, the health outcomes for young people have been pretty good. And, you know, maybe that's true. It's not really my place to say that one way or another, but there's just sort of an aspect of the way that Orgeron speaks there that's a little too shoot for the hip for some people. It's been kind of a weird off season for LSU. You know, you had the opt-outs. Some of them kind of coming in a strange time. Some guys opting out, then opting back in. It just sort of seems like that, you know, LSU as the reigning national champion has just not felt as much like a reigning national champion as you might typically expect a team like that to feel. And obviously, and I'm going to be very, very selfish here for a moment because I clearly want Georgia to get players that LSU might be recruiting. You almost wonder if the way in which the offseason has gone for LSU, whatever it has caused players to decide they don't want to be a part of the program or players to have one foot in, one foot out, the kind of weird way Orgeron's name seems to show up in the news from time to time. You're kind of left to wonder, does this have an impact on LSU recruiting? Like the one thing that I'm a big believer in, is that recruits are always the first to know about what's going on with the program. In other words, a coach can go talk to the media and give a message, and fans are very likely to believe that because they are far removed. They are several circles removed from what's actually going on. So if program says, hey, you know, we got everything we need to compete for a championship. If a coach says that, fans will believe that because the fans are far enough removed that it might as well be true. However, recruits are brought onto the inside of a program. Recruits are kind of, they lift the hood up. They look at the engine. They see what's really going on. And I'll be kind of self-serving again and cite Florida, for instance, on this. Media believes that Florida's on the verge of winning a national championship. Many of them do anyway. Plenty of fans believe that's true there as well. But if that were about to happen, why isn't Florida recruiting better? You know, why aren't elite recruits falling all over themselves to be a part of Florida's, you know, signing class? Now, the Gators fan may say the 2021 class may be a little bit better than the recent classes have been, and that may be true. Florida's still a factor for a few of the top recruits that are out there. But for the most part, Dan Mullen's ability to convince the media that he's the smartest offensive coach in football has not really quite worked convincing recruits of that. His top players, many of which are transfers from other programs, guys that, you know, had a hard time finding a home somewhere else and came to Florida as a way of resurrecting themselves. And that's worked out fine, you know, from time to time. But it's not quite the same thing as signing one of the best classes at a high school each and every year. To get back to the point of LSU here for a moment, you know, you wonder if the same thing could be true, that is there something going on at LSU that's caused all these opt-outs, that, you know, is there some way in which that, you know, Orgeron's, you know, dealing with situations there that somehow, you know, impacting the way that people view LSU currently as the reigning national champion? And if so, does that impact, you know, some of the guys like Mason Smith, the five-star defensive tackle, watching LSU closely, perhaps? Corey Foreman, you know, out of California, but recently on campus, or at least I should say in Baton Rouge a couple of weeks ago. The kind of odd nature of the LSU offseason, is someone like Foreman paying close attention to that? Obviously, we have no way of knowing. But you do kind of wonder, when you see, you know, less than stellar headlines a few times in a row here, is there some sort of reverberation with that in recruiting? Because if something's going on at LSU, recruits themselves would be the first to know. Here on Dog Nation, we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. I also want to talk about Georgia's own recruiting story here for a moment. Elias Judy, four-star, we'll call him a linebacker from out of Philadelphia, a spot where Georgia's recruited well at. Judy has decided to open back up his recruitment just a bit, putting out there on social media that he is going to rethink things with the UGA here a little bit. Let me read you the words from Elijah Judy on Twitter about that. Can I show you the Judy tweet so we can read that? He says, I know there's been a lot of rumors saying that I'll be decommitting from Georgia. I've been fighting and debating it for a couple of months now, and I came to the conclusion that I have to do what's best for me. So with that being said, I will be decommitting from UGA. He then went on to say that he'll make his decision coming up. I think he said sometime in September. You know, later on, he's going to make his decision about where he's going, and you kind of wish him well with that. I know this process has been challenging for a lot of these recruits, not being able to take visits, not being able to do the process by which they've kind of come accustomed, or previous generations of recruits have kind of become accustomed to with all of that. So Judy rethinking things, Georgia going to try to restock and keep that class elite, and we'll wish Judy well as he moves on to the next phase of his football life. I will say that Elijah Judy in some ways was kind of the classic 2021 story. I don't really feel like I ever really even got to know him all that well. Not know him personally, but, you know, he kind of did his video when he announced. It was kind of one of those live, I think it was Instagram live type things. And, you know, sometimes there are these, like, you know, guys that talk about committing to Georgia, and you just get all the feels in the world from something like that about just how much it means to them. I never got the sense that Judy was quite as connected to UGA as some of the guys are when they make that commitment. It's already been predicted there are going to be a lot of decommitments this year. Judy may feel kind of like the classic 2021 style decommitment of a guy that maybe just didn't have the emotional connection to a program that he needed. And obviously for Georgia, it's got its eyes on a lot of other, you know, potential pass rushers for this class. We'll keep following that. How about Gator Hater Updater on the way out the door here? Let's give you that number, 1,418 days. That's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Harris Cherokee Casino Resort.